As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag. How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. Corn has rallied a dollar from the August lows, and beans have rallied more than $2, and wheat has rallied more than $1.25. And that's happened during harvest. That alone raises a lot of questions about what's really happening in these markets. Oh, yeah, there was a debate last night. We've got it all covered on The Free For All.
Live from Full Frontal Friday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it is our Friday Free For All. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Pam Johnson are all standing by. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork, and I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's your beloved host, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you, man.
Yeah, baby.
Did you see what I did
there?
Yeah, baby. Did you see what I did?
I didn't notice. I wasn't paying attention.
Okay, well, I tried to get everybody in a great mood talking about a dollar rally in corn, $2 in beans, more than $1.25 in wheat. Mm-hmm. I mean, counter-seasonal during harvest.
Yeah.
If that has got to make you feel like really, really good.
Well, so let's make it practical. That feels like the kind of rally that bears rewarding in well, some way.
That's I'm true.
Just,
that's
just
true. I'm
thought.
Just trying to get everybody in a good mood.
Okay.
Before we start talking about the debate.
Oh, see, now you can't do that. You can't. It's push-pull. Nobody likes the push-pull, all right? Just push. Just stick with the push.
Sticking with
it's
the push.
It's a great
push.
Day,
okay.
Everybody. Yes,
it's
yes.
It's beautiful.
Corn's going to 1 million, baby. 1 million.
Oh, man. We've got some active weather coming our way here over the next few days, 4 or 5 days, too. There's looks like Sunday is going to be our next best chance for some snow here in Northeast Iowa. The winds that are going to be tearing up parts of the country, including out on the West Coast, something that we're all going to have to watch very, very closely. Conversation with Jack Lavers on the Farmer Forum on Wednesday was, you know, we understand or we know that there are all kinds of problems out in the timber management issues and everything out on the West Coast. But when you read about it and read that story that Jack recommended by Dave Daly, it's heartbreaking. It is shattering. It's not heartbreaking. It's heart shattering to read that story. There is a link to that story out on the AgriTalk Twitter feed. Just find it, and I may put that link back out there again, too, after mentioning it, just to make sure that you guys can find it. It's something that you got to read, and something that that I'm going to be thinking about as those winds kick up over the weekend out on the West Coast. All right, man. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of ground to cover today. Let's go ahead and get to the news.
Well, Chip, the presidential debate last night was deemed a success in that it revealed some stark contrasts between Trump and Biden and their respective political parties. The candidates discussed issues including COVID-19, oil policy, immigration, and ethics in their final debate. Quote, "We're rounding the corner," said Trump, adding that people were, quote, "learning to live with the virus." Biden shot back. He says we're learning to live with it. People are learning to die with it. On the potential future lockdowns, Trump says no, while Biden says maybe. I imagine you guys will probably mention the debates in the coming hour.
I'll save the comments for that.
yes. Well, speaking of COVID, global cases are now nearing 42 million with 1.13 million deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. case count is around 8.5 million with 223,000 fatalities. France reported more than 40,000 new cases for the first time, while Italy, Germany, and at least 8 other nations also recorded record infections. But The FDA formally approved the drug remdesivir, making it the first official treatment for the disease.
Good.
Chip.
Yeah. 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 And the therapeutic or treatment, I think will help with some of the consumer confidence out there and help some get. But I don't think anybody is still going to be going out of their way saying, now there's a treatment. I'm not going to worry about it. This is still a major economic headwind for us.
Well, Chip, three national restaurant chains have filed suit against poultry companies seeking damages for price fixing. Cracker Barrel, White Castle, and Golden Corral have all filed suits alleging Tyson Foods, Inc., Pilgrim's Pride, and other poultry companies conspired to limit competition. The suits come on the heels of the Justice Department's probe into chicken price fixing, which resulted in the indictment of a slew of poultry industry executives and other employees. Excuse me there.
Yeah, and there's already been some fines paid on this. Some pleas have been entered and fines have been paid. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Customs data released by China shows the country has already imported 6.67 million metric tons of 7.2 million metric tons from its corn TRQ for 2020. With just 3 months remaining in the calendar year, Chip, that's up 72.5% from a year ago. It's the first time the country has ever used all of its quota through that TRQ, and that includes 1.08 million metric tons of corn imported during September. That was a 675% surge from a year ago, buddy.
Right. Yeah, and if you're looking for one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that this corn market has posted a dollar rally, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it right there.
Well, finally, the full Senate will begin debate today on the confirmation of Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett ahead of an expected final vote Monday. The Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday voted her nomination 12-0 in favor, with panel Democrats boycotting the vote. She needs only a simple majority of 51 votes in the full Senate for full-on confirmation. Chip.
Yeah, I want to get the group's take on the boycott of the vote there by the Democrats on the panel. See what they think. To me, you show up and you vote.
I mean,
make your opinion known. Vote no. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know what boycotting proved. All right, thanks, Davis. Let's make time here for Jennifer Shike. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing this morning, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. So the Lehman China Swine Conference, did it happen this year?
It did. It happened, and it happened in a really big way. This was their biggest year ever, and they actually did have the conference in person because they aren't experiencing as many cases of COVID-19 now. So they had around 8,200 registrants, but I've heard that they had about an additional 12,500 online through their WeChat forum. So huge, huge turnout for this event this year.
Yeah. A couple of the highlights, what were they?
Well, you know, obviously African swine fever is, shaping and driving their industry right now. And so this year, you know, that again was a topic they discussed about how to keep the disease under control. But quite honestly, one of the things that stood out to me was just the huge amount of capital that is entering the Chinese pork industry right now, with wean pigs selling for $200 or $250 a pig. There's a lot of money there. And so how they're going to expand and grow that industry is interesting. I think technology were the biggest booths that they had at their trade show, and especially artificial intelligence.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, Jennifer, you're doing the kids' farm costumes for Halloween, right? Where do they send them?
Yes. Please email me, jshike@farmjournal.com. We'd love to see your best farm costumes for a special story we're going to be putting out next Friday. So send them to me, and we'll try to get them worked in.
Thanks, Jennifer. We've got the free-for-all coming your way next. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. an increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh, I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all for you today. Let's bring in Iowa Farmer, past president of NCGA, Pam Johnson. How you doing this morning, Pam?
Hey, good morning. We're well here.
Good, good, good. So give us the latest on harvest progress up in northeast Iowa.
Well, before we had 7/10 inch of rain, which was very welcome, we had a major combine problem, and the nearest part that we needed was in Dallas, Texas. So we've been shut down for a couple days.
Oh, no. Ain't that how it usually works?
Yep.
Good grief. Well, at least at least you got the rain to make the wait a little easier, right?
Yes, and it's, you know, we've been also drilling cover crops alongside of combining and harvest, so this rain is really going to help those get a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good point. All right, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing this morning, Sean?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Chip. Great to be here, and baseball back on TV again today. That'll be great.
Yeah, with people in the stands.
Yeah, it's nice to see, you know, to see they're kind of scattered out, but it is very, very good to see.
Right, exactly. I mean, Tampa Bay might be kind of used to that.
Yeah, it's a normal crowd.
It's a normal crowd for Tampa Bay.
It's actually more than a Tampa Bay crowd, probably, in some cases.
Exactly. All right, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. Last night I got my Jack Rudy tonic syrup out and Bombay Sapphire, and boy, I like that debate.
Well, I guess that's a little self-medication to make it easier to take the debate. Good stuff. Hey, I want to start with something that Davis talked about in the news that, Jim, I feel like you and me and Pro Farmer has been on top of this story, and the customs data released by China shows the country has already imported 6.67 million metric tons of its 7.2 million metric tons of the corn TRQ for 2020. Their TRQ is, I mean, it's already gone up, hasn't it?
Well, you'll have the official announcement. What I don't like about this, Chip, is USDA is bowed to China on this one, and they're like lemmings on this one, and they're going to follow suit. China's going to announce this additional quotas of a rather lot, but USDA is hanging out there with only 7 million ton total corn import estimates when it's going to be 20 to 30 million tons.
Yeah.
And that's why you're probably going to go to $4.75 to $5 corn, by the way.
Man, you just ruined it. You just absolutely ruined it when the policy guy starts doing price outlook.
No, I'm quoting some good analysts that I've been hearing. Joe Kearns.
What was that?
Do you know him? Joe Kearns.
Who? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good analyst.
Very good. Very good. No doubt about it. Pam, this the shipments of corn are happening. I mean, this is fantastic news that we're moving some of this product out of the country.
Yes, it is. A sale is a sale is a sale. And I've said all along, we need China and China needs us. So it is great news.
Yep. Yep. Very good. Okay. I want to switch gears real quick and let's go to the committee vote that advanced the Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. Jim, what officially was the reason for the boycott?
Well, they say that getting a vote on her in the full Senate is a sham. So from a personal standpoint, they're very upset. On the one part, I understand that, but like you said, their job is to vote and to attend committee hearings, especially in the Judiciary Committee. On my podcast, Signal to Noise, I would say it would be a signal of noise, Chip. It was theater.
Gotcha. Pam, what was your take on the boycott?
I can understand their frustration. So, if you have a good process to get something done, I don't care if it's a Supreme Court nominee or policy changes, then you have a good outcome. But when that process falls apart, I can understand why the Democrats are frustrated. And personally, if I was in their shoes, I don't think I could take one more snarling comment from either Lindsey Graham or Ted Cruz. So I think the point was made about, this was rammed through and will be rammed through the Senate without taking a vote and making sure that we can get the HEROES Act passed that's been laying there since early summer. So priorities, and whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or you listen to public radio or you listen to Fox News, your opinion on this is all going to be different.
Yeah,
but and it's going to be interesting because if the polls are correct and the Democrats have all three areas of government in the next through the next cycle, it's going to be interesting to see if they show the discipline that they're asking for of the Republicans currently, or do they do their own ramming through of their own issues. I think it's as long as it happens, if your side's doing it, everybody can justify it, and this is another example when it comes to the Supreme Court nominee.
Right, right. And boycotting the vote is more of a boycott of the process, I guess. And I think, by boycotting it, they're basically saying that the process isn't happening. Well, that's ignoring reality. Yeah. I just wish they would have voted no. I wish they would have voted because the process is happening, like it or not. The process is happening. And I think Jim, it's kind of systematic. It's a symptom of how politics is being handled now. If you don't like it, ignore it. Look away.
Yeah, it was not a good scene. So, again, I understand from an emotional standpoint, but that's not policy.
It too. They're frustrated.
Yeah, they have a role to vote, and they did not do their job.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I was somebody that had voted for one of those senators, I would want them to vote.
Absolutely.
They are there to represent you. And so just walking away and saying, we're going to do a political it's clearly a political stunt, and I think they owe it to the people that voted for them to actually vote and let it be heard. And so it's on the record.
Right.
And right, guys, but we could say that on both sides, right? Neither side is immune to that criticism right now.
Oh, no.
And so I think the question comes, as you've said, Sean, is, you know, the pendulum swings. Who's going to have the most discipline not to take revenge? And so far, we haven't seen that.
Interesting. Okay. I am going to go ahead and launch into one of these, some of the debate issues here. Let's see if I can get to exactly where I want to be on this. Okay. The question came up. The moderator asked Vice President Biden, are you going to punish, I guess, the China for how it handled coronavirus? And basically he came right out. Pay for unleashing coronavirus on the world. He said that he would make China play by the international rules, and then he added, not like he has done. And then he immediately, Jim, went to China trade, talked about the trade deficit. He talked about getting rid of the requirement that companies operating in China must share intellectual property, and that it must be in a partnership with the Chinese company that owns 51% of the company. I mean, these are all really good ideas, aren't they?
But they're not followed. You've had both Democratic and Republican administrations prior to Trump that really let China do very bad things in the trade arena. So I don't think that's a winning issue for him. I just don't.
And I don't know what. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, because one of the ways in order to hold China accountable was all the work that was done to get us into the Trans-Pacific Partnership, not just for trade, but to reestablish a balance of power in Southeast Asia. And so when the first thing that Trump did was withdraw us from that, it's hard to accuse prior administrations of D's for not trying to hold Trump accountable, or China accountable. And that, I think that's just one example.
But if Clinton had won in 2016, Jim, we still wouldn't be in TPP, would we? At least that's what she said.
No, that's why Obama didn't bring it up, because they didn't have the votes. And as Greg Dowd, the ag official at the U.S. Trade Rep's office, said, there were problems with that TSP, and it would have had to been, you know, renegotiated. So, I just think the TSP, although having some merits, there's no doubt from a geopolitical perspective, it didn't have the votes.
Haney, I'm going to tee you up. I want to hear about how the TPP is working out when we come back. All right, we've got the free-for-all going on today's AgriTalk. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which comes out to about 2 billion reasons why you should be encouraging people to use biofuels. If there was enough demand for biofuels, not only could we address these problems, that corn surplus could quickly help ag producers like you improve your operation. So help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
All right, Brian, I'm going to start with the positive in this market here today. Corn is trading to the upside. D's contract got to within a quarter of a cent of 420. It's a pretty nice move that we've got going.
Yeah, a heck of a nice move, Chip, and more daily export sales. So unknown this time was the buyer, so that's given us some fundamental support. But I think a lot of the price support, you look to the wheat market, and we're seeing gains upwards of 10 cents in the winter wheat markets. So that's given some support, different from what we've seen earlier in the week. The soy meal market's been leading both beans and corn to the upside, but meal's pulled back a little bit, and that's got soybeans under pressure as well this morning.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it, the role that wheat plays in all of this. And today, it's almost like they may be doing a little bit of selling in beans, but they're doing the buying in wheat. It's a weird relationship right now.
Well, the wheat market does need to do some of the heavy lifting. You know, it can't just be a follower. all the time. I think if you want to sustain this type of the types of rallies we've had in the grain and soy markets, you need all three of them to participate. So wheat's taking its turn today into the weekend. So we'll see if that buyer interest holds up or not into the close today.
Very good. Good point. Good point. Okay. Not a lot of activity in the livestock trade.
No, I'm pretty quiet, actually, to close out the week. We are seeing a little bit of corrective rebound in the front end of the live cattle market, but we had a little bit better gains earlier on, and we've since backed off. So not much buyer interest there, even though, you know, like I said, we've beat the downside pretty hard here recently. Hog market's similar with the front end up and the back end under a little bit of price pressure.
Gotcha. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. We got the free-for-all going today. We've got pro farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Iowa farmer past president of NCGA, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Okay, we were talking about trade at the end of the last segment. You look at that global map, and there's the big hole right between Canada and Mexico that is not included in the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, the CPTPP. Haney, how's it working out for Canada?
Well, I think really well. Yeah, the water's warm over here. You guys are missing out. You should try to get back in the game. It's been very positive for agriculture. So Canada has really, really enjoyed the opportunity to ship a lot of beef and wheat as two examples into the agreement. Of course, there was the year period where the U.S. did not have a free trade agreement with Japan, where we even enjoyed better market access when it came to tariffs. You know, the interesting thing here, Chip, is that a lot of the text that was used in the USMCA was actually from the TPP. And so it comes down to a situation of branding and how you sell it to people. You know, now with the UK looking to potentially as well get into the CPTPP, that would just be another economy that would be a great benefit to the trade pact, which would actually get them closer to this idea of using multilateral trade agreements to really rein in China and try to hold them accountable instead of the more bilateral strategy that the U.S. is engaged in.
Okay. Has it given the combination of Canada, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, I could probably list them all, but I'm not going to. Yeah. Do you feel like you have increased leverage against some of these Chinese issues?
Well, not. I would say no, because the largest economy in the world has not participated, and so I think that whole idea, that strategy, sort of fell on its face when the U.S. fell out. It would be the way I would kind of look at that.
Okay, Jim.
I just don't think there's so much to gain on the part of U.S. We have that bilateral with Japan. We've got excellent trade relations, at least right now, with Vietnam. From a geopolitical standpoint, as I said, it does have some merit, but it's going to have to be revised for the, you know, U.S. to really want to get back in.
Okay.
Revised. Okay, so let's talk about the details. Sorry, I don't want to take over, Chip.
No, go ahead.
What are the things that need to be revised, Jim, for the U.S. to be interested in a re-entry?
More in the digital trade area and the financials.
Right. Well, don't we have a template from the USMCA deal?
USMCA. Like, that should be part of the renegotiation of TPP or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but a lot of those things in the USMCA were like this is kind of a circular argument. Like, I'm not really sure there's that big of a gap to actually close
the same
here.
Same thing. Yep. Yeah.
I just think it's not on Trump's brand. I think, to go at this with allies. He likes the idea of, I am doing this, I will fix it, I'm going to have a summit, I'm going to have a meeting, and we're going to sort this out because I have a good relationship. He's not for the, we're doing this as a group.
Yeah. Well, it still gets things done, I guess. Pam, does, if President Biden or Vice President Biden becomes President Biden, which, according to the polls, is looking increasingly likely, does he get us back into TPP?
Well, I agree so much with Sean, and I think a couple things. So when did trade become a dirty word in the United States? And I think Trump has pushed that agenda. And also, you know, back when Peter Navarro said, nobody's going to retaliate against us because they need us. And using the tariffs and even saying last night that, you know, great guys, China's paying all these tariffs and I'm giving it all. I'm giving $28 billion to our wonderful farmers. Well, the fact of the matter is China is not paying those tariffs. The U.S. consumer, taxpayer, farmers included, are paying them.
We've talked about that many, many times on AgriTalk, and I think everybody understands what my stand on this is that it is a consumption tax. I don't feel like we need to restate that.
Okay. I guess my point is, when did trade become a dirty word? And I think all of us, Republicans and Democrats, have a lot of work to do in our own Congress, whether it's with the congressional members who are Democrats or Republicans, to get them back to understanding that 95% of the world lives outside the U.S. and we have to be able to trade. And so I think that is the point. Will Biden get us back in there? I don't think we can jump right back in because the rest of the world has moved on without us. Canada, as Sean has articulated very well with other countries, have moved on without us.
But it sounds like, Sean, if the U.S. wants to be part of the CPTPP, would the door be open?
Well, I would think so. That's a question for Japan as the ringleader of the trade deal. But I would be shocked if countries like Canada and Mexico and Australia would step in front of that one at all.
Right.
I think it would be open arms to say, hey, how do we get them back in here? Because I think Canada, maybe more of a globalist nation, believes that the multilateral approach will work.
Right. Question from Steve came my way on Twitter. Wants to know, Jim, I'm going to let you handle this first. What happens to phase one with China if we have a President Biden?
He hasn't really addressed that. I think that he would follow through because that's very pro when it comes to agriculture, even though it looks like they'll come closer than many thought on the $36.5 billion by the end of this calendar year. But like Pam says, I think he's going to take about a year to really find out where he wants to go on the trade, you know, policy front. At least that's what I hear from the Biden people.
Interesting. Okay. We done with trade and between the two?
Well, I wouldn't call it dirty trade myself. Look at soybean exports. Look at the bulging exports of corn. So if that's the case, I want to play in mud.
Well, I think one of the reasons why, you know, it's supposed to be a lot of foreign affair topics last night. They went in a whole bunch of different directions. I thought they did not spend a lot of time on China at all. And I think one of the reasons is because the two candidates actually are so similar on that, on things need to change. Maybe the how they do it is a little bit different, but they're both talking somewhat tough on China. So there's sort of splitting hairs.
Yeah. If I can throw one item out that I wanted to hear more conversation on last night, it would be the economy and plans to dig us out of the hole that the coronavirus has pulled us into, Jim.
But once they get involved in that, you heard Biden blame he called it a depression that we're in, or a great recession, on Trump, as if all the pandemic was his fault and it was yeah, to me, obviously, China. That's what they should have addressed.
Okay. Interesting. Pam?
Yeah, I don't blame Trump for that. It's his fault that we had COVID. But I think, as I've said in the debate with Sam Clovis, I think the difference is when someone in leadership is faced with a crisis, whether it's a health crisis or an economic crisis, the proof of the pudding is in how they handle that crisis. And I think that's where the criticism can come. So I think, you know, the economy, Trump thinks as long as the stock market stays up there, that the economy is doing well, and the stock market is not all there is about the economy. Ask people in rural America about the economy. A lot of them don't have stock in the stock market. And so what they see is the economy on Main Street. And, you know, just to clarify, I do not think trade is a dirty word. What I'm saying is when I was in D.C. working the Hill, there were Republicans and Democrats who were against trade. And that's something that we have to work on together.
Yeah.
Let the record show that Pam had to clarify her statement, much like Biden did in his boo-boo on the oil industry.
I can own up to clarifying my statement anytime.
There you go.
But that is the sign of a great leader, is to be able to clarify what you're saying.
Very good.
On energy, like Biden should have put like a year attached to that a little bit when he said, you know, we need to phase it out. It was like, and of course, some people take that as like it's tomorrow. And he probably would have done himself a huge favor had he said, you know, in the next 25 to 75 years. I just think he should attach a number to it a little bit. He would have.
Jim, what's your take on that?
It sounded crazy, like how he did it.
He had a follow-up question by Trump, and he said yes.
Yeah.
Once you have an opportunity, I used to debate, and that was a scoring point. Just, you know, no doubt about it. And Trump said, hope you voters are listening in Texas, Pennsylvania, and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I also think that the energy companies, both domestic and Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, have been looking at, eventually we will have to move away from fossil fuels, and what is their role going to be there? And that question is being talked about in boardrooms at Exxon.
Okay. All right. We got Bob Hemesath on the Farmer Forum on Wednesday brought up an excellent point about how they define infrastructure. I want to talk about that next.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
All right. Welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, Sean Haney with us. Bob Hemesath from Iowa was on the Farmer Forum on Wednesday, guys. And he said it's interesting when you hear the Democrats talk about supporting an infrastructure plan and Republicans supporting an infrastructure plan, but in reality, the plans are different enough that it's hard to get. It sounds like a bipartisan issue that isn't, Jim. Is that right?
I think that there'll be so much money to float around that most people, but both parties will get what they want. I don't see many policy differences, Chip, to tell you the truth. The major difference is in the funding mechanism. How is it funded? And in that regard, Trump, I think, is more aligned on the Democratic side than Republicans.
But aren't the Democrats going to want to do way more green type infrastructure?
Pam?
Wouldn't that be a big difference?
Is that in the infrastructure plan, Pam?
Well, I think number one, it's just like we've been promised for how long, is let's see it. Let's see somebody's infrastructure plan take hold, right? Whether it's on ports or locks and dams, highways, bridges. So I think the whole plan about getting jobs and moving toward a plan that's green is maybe finally renewable fuels will have a future in infrastructure, and as we talked about renewable fuels and low carbon, high octane. Maybe we'll finally get a chance now. I think there's a detailed plan out there.
And what Bob was talking about was the plan for all the electric vehicle charging stations across the country, and you know, spending billions and billions of dollars to put the EV charging stations out there. I haven't seen that plan. Is that in there?
I have.
Well, that's in Biden's plan. I think. What did he say? 52,000.
52,000. Said
that last night. I'm just going from memory, but I think that makes sense. If we're clearly going to EVs, and unlike ethanol, who didn't have an infrastructure plan for the blend pumps, it looks like the electronic vehicles are going to do it the right way.
Electric vehicles will be market driven, and there are a certain percentage of Americans that will want them, and both presidential candidates support electrical vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, and you've also got private companies putting in charging stations. Of course, Tesla, you see their stations periodically throughout parts of the U.S. and in Canada. Volvo made a big announcement here in Canada this week that they're going to put charging stations across the country, similar to Tesla, for their EV vehicles. So there's going to be a lot of public and private money going into these charging stations.
Yeah. I just don't know where all the electricity is going to come from.
Or
anybody?
The electrical grid that's going to handle it, right?
Yeah.
California. Yeah,
well, California, out in California, the Prop 15, if it passes, it's gonna raise taxes on the solar panels.
Yeah.
So that's discouraging more solar panels. I don't understand all this. I don't understand where all this electricity is going to come from.
It's like we're going to expand our grain exports, but we're not going to consider the size of the ports or the do we have the adequate rail system to actually get it off the farm. It's similar to that sort of discussion.
It's weird. It's weird to me. I like to be able to connect dots very cleanly on issues like this. And on this one, I cannot connect those dots. I just can't. Haney, you had a great interview with, I'm talking about the carbon tariffs.
So I talked to Marla Orenstein this week. She's with the Canada West Foundation. She specializes in energy policy. Talking about carbon tariffs or carbon border adjustments. This is something that's being discussed heavily in the EU. They're trying to accomplish two things. One, it's trying to level the playing field. So as domestically inside Canada or the US, as you raise some of the environmental requirements and the trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you put a tariff on incoming goods from countries that are not maybe following some of your same environmental policies, like Brazil or China. And what this does, or the idea is that it will reduce carbon leakage, which is where you raise the domestic policy so high that basically what happens is you try to import a whole bunch of cheap stuff from Brazil and China as examples that don't have any of these policies. You've leveled the playing field. And so we'll see. Like if I think this is something that if Biden's elected, they're going to talk a lot more about. It's being discussed in Canada, and it is definitely being discussed in Europe. So expect to hear more about carbon tariffs.
Yeah, yeah, good one. Are you going to tweet a link out to that interview?
I will, yep. Excellent. I will. I'll tweet it out, and I'll tag Edgar Talk in it.
Perfect, because I want to get it out there. Another thing that was mentioned in the debate last night, I don't think that I heard enough conversation on it, but Jim, what is your take on this Hunter Biden situation?
Well, now we have the network news having to cover it. I think I've always wanted them to do true investigative research to counterbalance what we've seen as breaking news on Fox News. So now at least we have, hopefully, some true journalism going on this. It doesn't smell good, but I want some more facts on this one.
Right. I like that point. And they can no longer use the excuse that, well, these documents aren't verified, therefore we're not even working on it. Well, the way that you verify the documents is work the story. Yes. You know, and then tell us, are they fake or are they real? They got to work the story. Don't they, Pam?
I think it was a good thing when this was talked about a little bit last night, and Joe Biden said, the families I'm going to talk about are not mine or yours, because he could have gone low there. We all know he could have. And I think, yes, we need to get to the truth, but
yeah,
from what I've read, it also depends on the news source you're listening to, right? And even some of the story writers in the New York Post didn't agree with the story. So
I just want to get to the truth, and that means that we need to work the story. The story needs to be worked. Guys, great discussion today. Appreciate all your time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again next week.
Cheers, everybody.
Yep, thanks.
All right, come back this afternoon, guys. We got Carl Setzer from AgriVisor. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.